Senator Poggemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Monsignor James Habiger from the University of St. Thomas.
So good. If you can make it up those steps, you're still doing good.
We stand before you, gift-giving God, conscious of our shortcomings, but aware that we gather in your name. Emmanuel, God with us, enlighten our minds, inflame our hearts, give us light and strength to know your will, to make it our own, and to live it in our lives. Guide us by your wisdom as we address the work that is before us. You desire justice for all your children. Let us uphold the rights of all your people. Do not allow us to be misled by ignorance or corrupted by fear or favor. Unite us to yourself in the bond of love and keep us faithful to all that is true. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. See you. People now. Come back again someday, would you?
I will.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Poggemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House file numbers 272, 532, and 1441. Signed, Albany Mathews, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. Do we have an
That message was on the addendum. First reading on the addendum. These bills will be read for the first time. Next order of business is reports of committees. They're on today's agenda, and then we do have an addendum that is on today's agenda.
Mr. President.
Senator Poggemiller.
I move that the committee reports printed in today's agenda and the addendum be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business, second reading of Senate bills plus the addendum. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a few authors' motions. Without objection, we will take them as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There's one resolution on today's agenda without objection. That resolution, number 58, will be sent to the Rules Committee.
Mr. President.
There's a resolution to be read at the desk.
Senators Pogemiller and Senger introduce Senate Resolution Number 59 relating to major appropriation and tax bills, setting criteria for floor amendments, and suspending Senate Rule 7.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I'd move to lay that resolution on the table.
On the motion to lay the resolution on the table, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. There's one more motion to be read at the desk.
Senator Erickson Ropes moves that Senate File 251, Number 5 on the consent calendar, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President,
Senator Pogemiller.
Then I'd move that we take up the 12th order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills, and then we would, just to give people a heads up, and then we would take up Senate Resolution 59, and then we would have two special orders, the higher ed bill and the egg and vets bill. So I would move to take up the 12th order of business.
On the motion by Senator Pogemiller to take up the 12th order of business, introduction, first reading of Senate bills, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. We have three bills we'll give their first reading to.
Senator Stumpf introduces Senate File Number 2095, a bill for an act relating to education, providing for early childhood and family, kindergarten through grade 12, and adult education, etc.
Without objection, the bill will be referred to the Finance Committee.
Senators Anderson, Fredrickson, Saxhog, and Kubley introduce Senate File 2096, a bill for an act relating to state government, appropriating money for environmental, natural resources, and energy purposes, etc.
Without objection, will be referred to the Finance Committee.
Senator Berglund introduces Senate File 2097, a bill for an act relating to health, proposing an amendment to the Minnesota Constitution, Article 13, by adding a section affirming that every resident of Minnesota has the right to affordable health care.
Without objection, will be sent to the Rules and Administration Committee.
The balance are on the agenda today.
The balance are on today's agenda. First reading. Still on motion, Senator.
Mr. President, then I would move to take Senate Resolution 59 off the table.
On the motion to take Resolution 59 off the table, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. President, thank you. Members, Senate Rule 59 is a rule that sets criteria for floor amendments related to the major appropriation and tax bills. The Senate Rules Committee has discussed this over a couple week period here, and we currently have a rule in the Senate, Rule Number 7, I believe, that is 3 or 4 pages long, and if you study the rule closely, you will find out, if you've been here, that the Senate has pretty much been ignoring the rule over the last few years. And so in the Rules Committee, we discussed whether we actually shouldn't try to accomplish a rule that would be something that we would actually use on the Senate floor in terms of allowing members the opportunity to deal with the Senate budget in a way that created real votes about choices that are being made in these budget bills. And so Senator Senjum and I have introduced this resolution that came out of the Rules Committee that in essence says that an amendment to a major appropriation or tax bill has to be balanced in that bill. So today we're going to take up the higher ed bill. An amendment to that bill could be of several forms. First, it could be an amendment that just says, I don't want to spend that much money. I would like that appropriation to be removed from the bill or that program or something. That would be okay because it doesn't bust the budget in that bill. So that amendment is perfectly in order. An amendment that wanted to spend some additional money would have to be balanced in the bill. And so a choice would have to be made as to what other appropriation in the bill would have to be reduced. And that amendment then would be perfectly in order. The third portion of that talks about tax expenditures in the tax bill, number 3. It's on lines 1.14 and 1.15. And that language, in effect, does the same thing for the tax bill with regards to tax expenditures. So you can, any amendment that reduces spending either can leave the money in the bill, or you could lower an appropriation in the bill also so that it all balanced out. But if you're just reducing spending, you don't need to balance it. You could just say, I want to reduce that, and that money can just fall to the bottom line. But if it's an amendment that spends money or creates a tax expenditure, you need to balance that in the bill. Now, in the Rules Committee, we did discuss that this does not allow an amendment, or amendment would be out of order if you said, I would like to spend more money for financial aid and center in the higher ed bill, and I would like to take that money out of the human service bill. It does not allow that. And the reason it doesn't allow that is because it's hard to get a handle on that, because until all of those bills are before us, there's really no way to figure out, and since we don't take them all up at once, it's hard to figure out what is that reduction in that other bill. And so the Rules Committee did discuss that. We discussed the possibility of having the full Senate vote on the budget targets for each bill. That's the one-page sheet that I believe all the members have seen. Those are the targets that the Finance Committee has worked off of. And we discussed basically adopting that first, where members then could make amendments to that to say, I would rather have more money in higher ed than in K-12. The problem with that, the Rules Committee discussed, was that you really have no way of judging what that amendment means because you don't know what is in those bills yet. And so you're kind of grasping at straws because it's hard to make a judgment whether the total dollar amount in one of these bills makes sense to you or to the Senate unless you know what's in the bill. So this, we decided that wasn't workable. And so what we're left with is this approach, which basically, which does say that you have to balance within the bill that's before us. I want to, and we had this discussion in the Rules Committee, I want to assure members that this is not an attempt to make it impossible for a member to get a vote on the floor on these budget bills that is a vote about choices. What it does is it just sets a ground rule for how to get that vote. Let's avoid having votes in the Senate about, I would like to spend $50 million on this, and I have no idea how I would pay for it. And those amendments have been offered by both majority and minority members. You will probably find out that there are majority members, at least they've been lining up in my office, that are not totally pleased with all of these budget bills because there is something that they didn't get, and they felt they should have gotten it because they're in the majority. But the budget chairs, I think, have tried to balance as best they could the aspirations of every member of the Senate, and sometimes you can't do everything. And so I genuinely, and this, you know, I don't expect people to take me at my word at this. What Senator Senjum and I are trying to do, though, is create a culture where we have debate about the amendments, the issues in the amendments, not a debate about whether the amendment can be afforded or not. And if we go by this rule, it will be clear that the amendment can be afforded because it's being paid for. And then it is a debate about the choice, either this or that. And so that is the spirit that this is being offered. It was unanimous, I believe unanimous, in the Rules Committee. It is being co-authored by Senator Senjum and I. I fully understand that some members will be concerned about this approach, but it is drafted so it only applies to this session. If this isn't workable for this 85th session, if this is not workable, we could take another run at some other approach. But I think it's a recognition that the current Rule 7 that we have isn't really functioning the way that the Senate had hoped it was functioning, because we frankly are going to be done with all these bills before we ever set budget resolutions on the floor. And I think if you notice how budget resolutions have been set over the years, there's so much leeway in there that you can set them almost any way you want and accomplish what you want without really being direct about what the choices are. So I would stand for questions. And again, I fully understand that some members may think that this is something that restricts them in their ability to function on the Senate floor. But I would just ask those members to consider, wouldn't it be better to have a 5 or 10 minute debate about the merits of the amendment rather than whether it's an amendment that balances? And I think that's the point of this. Let's at least debate amendments that balance.
Discussion on the resolution. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before we get into this culture building idea, I wish to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate was under call. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further proceedings be dispensed with and the sergeant be directed to bring in all absent members.
On the Limmer motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. On the Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, I guess I was just kind of wondering, and maybe I should ask Senator Pogemiller to yield.
He will yield.
I guess when we're talking about the budget targets and Rule 7, and it's suspended here, and Senator Pogemiller mentioned that the Senate in general has ignored that rule and not followed it, and so we have not set the budget targets. We've never had the opportunity, the general body, I mean, the members in particular in the minority have never had any input on those budget targets. We haven't had the opportunity to vote on them. We are now being bound by this resolution to follow budget targets that we've never had the opportunity to have any input on, and I wonder if he could comment on that.
Senator Pogemiller, did you get the question?
Mr. President. Senator Fischbach, yes, that's a problem and a challenge. And people have been trying to think about how could we accomplish that as a body? And Rule 7 doesn't accomplish that, is the problem. I mean, it was an attempt to do exactly what you suggested, have the full Senate adopt targets in a way that people meaningfully felt there was an understanding Senate-wide as to what the targets are. And so I think we pretty much know how the process works today. There are targets set that are given to the chairs of the finance divisions. This year they were set, and I think you've all seen the sheet. This year they were basically set by Senator Cohen and Senator Bach. In past years, they were managed by the majority leader and set by the majority leader. We tried to decentralize that as best as we could. And that's not to mean I didn't have some input. Obviously, I was part of asking questions, and you will see a bill that Senator Bach and I have later setting the budget reserve where there is not total agreement between everybody in the majority on that. But we've been struggling, Senator Fischbach, to look for a way to do exactly what you suggest, have a determination by the full Senate of what the individual targets are for each committee. I am open to trying to figure out a way to do that. What I want to tell you is, being both budget chair myself and tax, I was a K-12 and a tax chair, and now as majority leader, it's not as simple as it would seem to do this. It is, you would like to think it was a collaborative discussion where everybody could come to a consensus and then vote on it. But the reality is what happens is at some point you kind of hit a cliff and somebody says, usually the finance chair, the tax chair, or the majority leader, and hopefully all three of them, that's it. Go away. And it's not something that actually gets voted on generally in the majority either. And it's kind of the nature of the beast. It's a little more difficult than it would appear. But Senator Fischbach, I want to assure you, and Senator Senjum and I have talked about this, I would love to find a process that actually worked
where there could be a confirmation of targets on the Senate floor that we could all work off of. The best way I tried to approach it this year is once we did have these targets, these informal targets set, Senator Senjum got that sheet before our caucus got that sheet. And that's a fact. Now, it was within a matter of an hour, but before that it was shown to our entire caucus, Senator Senjum had a copy of that sheet, and I believe he actually showed your caucus that sheet maybe before our caucus saw it. Now, it's easy for me to say because it was the chairs of our caucus who basically had the most input on setting those targets. I fully understand that. If there is a way to do this in the future that accommodates what you've suggested, I would love to try to do that. I really would, because I think it would be better for the Senate if everybody had more buy-in to the original targets. From what I've picked up, the divisions are doing pretty well, and there has been quite a bit of bipartisanship on the divisions so far. And so, Senator Fischbach, I hope that's responsive to your question. If I knew how to do what you suggested, I would have tried to have done it this year.
Senator Fischbach.
Well, Mr. President, I would like to just point out that until we get to that point where people do have input, this kind of resolution is essentially, it's a gag rule for anyone to offer any amendments. I mean, by Senator Pogemiller's own admission, we have not had input. He called decentralizing the decision, giving the decision to two or maybe three people when there's 67 members of this body. And, you know, I would like to take just a minute and read a little passage from the Mason's Legislative Manual. It's section one. It's on page four, number five, down at the bottom. It says, "The great purpose of all rules and forms," says Cushing, and I will just comment here if you don't know who Cushing is. He writes, actually is the author of another legislative manual. "The great purpose of all rules and forms," says Cushing, "is to subserve the will of the assembly rather than to restrain it, to facilitate and not to obstruct the expression of its deliberative sense." And I do think that is what we are doing here. We are not allowing this body to discuss these amendments and have a full and open discussion on the Senate floor. We're already, before we've even seen anyone's amendments, we are already saying they're out of order. We're not allowing people to have full discussion. And I would plead to the majority members, too, to understand that, as Senator Pogemiller pointed out, that this means you, too, that if you have a project that didn't make it into the one of the bills, you're not even allowed to bring it to the floor and have the discussion if it does not fall in here. Falls into this resolution. So I would ask people to understand what we are here. We are a deliberative body. We are trying to do what's best for the state of Minnesota. And these kinds of rules put a gag on members of this body and not allow us to do what's best for the state of Minnesota. And I would request a roll call vote on this, and I would urge people to vote no because whether it balances the budget or whether it moves appropriations, that should be part of the discussion on this floor. And until we have the new kind of procedure that Senator Pogemiller talked about, we need to be able to do that on the floor until we all have input on those budget resolutions and are able to have our input into those things. And this is where we have our ability now, and we need to respect that, every one of us.
Three hands for a roll call. Okay, Senator, there will be a roll call. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, Senator Fischbach, I think, with all due respect, I think you've inaccurately portrayed the proposed rule. If you have a project, for example, let's say it's a direct project, let's say it's the bonding bill. If there's a project that is not in the bonding bill that you would like to do and it costs $2 million, you certainly can have that discussed on the Senate floor. You just have to tell people where you're going to get the $2 million. And to me, that is openness and transparency. It slows down some of the game playing where someone might say, well, I have a brilliant idea, and I don't have to tell you how I'm going to pay for it. If it's a brilliant enough idea, you should be able to tell people how you're going to pay for it, and if it's that good of an idea, people would be willing to do that, I would presume. And so I just think you've improperly characterized the proposed rule. You certainly can bring any issue before the body as long as the amendment is open and transparent as to how it's going to be paid for. And to me, that's fiscal conservatism. That is openness, transparency, and making tough choices, living within your means, and making tough choices. So I think that's actually the fiscally responsible and conservative thing to do. And it does create real votes on real issues then.
Senator Wergen first, and Senator Ortman, and then Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, originally when this came to my desk, I thought perhaps it was just a complete shutdown of the minority. This resolution might actually make some sense if the minority had had something to say about budget targets for the divisions, because let me tell you, I have some different opinions, but that probably doesn't come as a surprise to anybody in this body. And I think that as the minority, we have the right to have part of the discussion in the budget targets. But, you know, I'm even more concerned when I hear the majority leader stand up and say, essentially, two people made the decisions on budget targets. You know, with all due respect to Senator Cohen and Senator Bach, I don't think that's right. I think that's a complete shutdown of democracy when it comes to this part of the whole business of the legislative session and the legislative budget. I think we each should have had an opportunity to talk about budget targets within divisions. I think that's a very important part of what we do, and we can chat back and forth about how difficult that would be to do. Yes, it would be difficult. Yes, it might take hours and hours. Yes, the minority would probably end up being rolled by the majority, but the fact of the matter is we should have had the opportunity to talk about budget targets, set them here on the floor, and then go back to the committees. But not only have 65 out of 67 members, from what you said, been shut out of budget targets, we're now shut out of amendments besides. And it makes no sense to operate that way. I would call this, you know, something that stands and smacks right in the face of free speech. I don't believe that any amendment is out of order unless it's non-germane to a bill, Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. And will Senator Pogemiller yield?
He will yield. Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Senator Pogemiller, my question is directed to paragraph 3 of the resolution. And paragraph 3 says that an amendment to a major appropriation or tax bill, those are all of our spending bills, the mega bills, that is a Senate file, is out of order if it will change appropriations or revenues to an agency that was not in the bill as it was reported to the floor of the Senate, and vice versa. Senator Pogemiller, isn't that goal already accomplished in our rules of germaneness? I'm looking at rule number 35.2, and that rule has always been applied very liberally by the President of the Senate and upheld by this body. Amendments are ruled non-germane all the time in this chamber, and we don't take them up. 35.2 says a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different subject or is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill. It seems to me you don't need paragraph 3 because we've already accomplished it in the germaneness rule of 35.2, and so I would hope that you would take that out. The only difference is that we would have a discussion of whether the amendment's purpose is to accomplish something different than the original bill versus automatically ruling it out of order under your paragraph number 3, and I hope that you would agree that we don't need paragraph 3 because we have the germaneness rule in 35.2.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Ortman, 35.2 speaks to germaneness related to subject matter. And what we're dealing with here is appropriations and expenditures. And the purpose of Senate Resolution 59 is not an issue of germaneness in that sense, because in an omnibus bill, a lot of things are germane to the bill. I would like to spend more on my pet project. Senator Pappas has a bill today that she did not put something that I wanted pretty badly in. And I believe mine was $10 million. And I could stand up the floor and say, well, this is really a good idea, Senator Pappas. Are you against overseas travel of Minnesota students for educational purposes? And she will say probably, no, I'm not against that. The bill doesn't have enough money to pay that $10 million. And then I could proceed and say, well, I want to vote on that anyway, Senator Pappas. And I just think that's not fair. Because it's not an issue of whether Senator Pappas thinks it's a good idea or not. It's a question of fiscal responsibility. Can her bill afford it or not? And I think I need to be held accountable at that moment. And the accountability, this forces the accountability. It says, if I think that's that big of an idea, then I had to say, Senator Pappas, I think this is such a good idea. I would rather spend on overseas travel than on financial aid. And I'm going to take, my amendment takes $10 million out of financial aid and puts it into overseas travel. That's a fair amendment. That's a fair choice. It's clear. It's transparent. It's honest. And it's a real vote. And I think what we want to have in the culture in the Senate is a culture of real votes, not fake votes. Because fake votes turn into partisanship. Real votes turn into collaboration, discussion, and problem solving.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd say we want to have real debates and not fake debates. I don't want you to filter and stifle the things that can be brought to the Senate floor on behalf of Minnesotans. You want to stifle us and gag us. Well, there are 44 members in your caucus, and there are 23 in ours, Senator Pocomiller. Do you also need to tie our hands or gag our ability to bring amendments to the Senate floor? What are you afraid of with 44 votes? Paragraph 3 of your resolution is unnecessary because we can discuss it through the proper discussion of germaneness. If it doesn't relate because it relates to a different agency, that argument can be brought to the Senate floor. You've already accomplished with 1 and 2. 3 is just unnecessary. The very thing that you talked about is accomplished in paragraphs 1 and 2. 3 is just over the top. Apparently, you think that the members of the Senate will just act like sheep and make things easy for you. You don't want us to make life difficult or inconvenient or uncomfortable. But you're here in the Minnesota Senate. This is important for Minnesotans to understand that their members have every opportunity to talk about anything that relates to a bill. It's going to become law. That's the whole purpose. Can't we have a full debate about what is proposed law in the state of Minnesota? We're going to have probably 8 or 10 major budget bills. We're going to accomplish 95% of the state's budget in those 8, 9, or 10 bills, Senator Pogemiller. It's already frustrating enough for Minnesotans to hear us debate those bills. With huge impact, we're already suffering under the fact that we have to vote yes or no for these major bills with some good things and some bad things in them. We all suffer from that. And now you're going to say that we can't even bring up amendments to talk about it. I don't think this is appropriate, Senator Pogemiller. It's certainly not democratic, as Senator Fischbach said. And I would hope for the good of the chamber, for the good of the future of the state of Minnesota, for Minnesotans everywhere that care about what we do here in the Minnesota Senate, that you will withdraw this resolution.
Further, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe one of my concerns that I don't think has been fully addressed is that earlier in the session, a few top leaders in the majority caucus decided that they were going to set $600 million of the projected one-time surplus aside in the in reserve funds. Now, I don't know exactly where this money is, and I know that we haven't taken any official action to officially do that. But I do know that as earlier money came in that was kind of extra money, it was automatically put into reserve funds until they hit a certain limit. That limit has been achieved, and so we do have $1 billion in surplus dollars. Now, I don't know who decided exactly that it had to be $600 million, but what I would like to know is, would we be able to use any of that money? As far as I know, that's unencumbered money. It hasn't been designated for anything as of yet. So as these bills come up, if we had a one-time project, would we be able to look at that, or would this also prohibit us from doing that?
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, first I want to assure Senator Ortman that there's no fear involved here. Matter of fact, one of the key things that Senator Senjum and others are trying to do here is take the politics of fear out of the Senate. And we want to lead by example of openness, accountability, and fairness. And it is just simply not true that this proposed resolution limits debate. What it does is it says we're going to have real debates about real issues. Senator Roebling, a bill will come before the full Senate. I think Senator Bach is going to hear it tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, the setting the reserve, Friday, that I'm an author of, that Senator Bach is an author of, Senator Senjum and Senator Frederickson and Senator Clark are authors. This is not a bill that the chair of the Finance Committee is excited about, because I asked the chair of the Finance Committee to author it, and he said he would defer. The full Senate is going to vote. The full Senate is going to vote on whether we should set that money aside. I hope the Senate votes to do that. And the reason is because we have to constrain spending in a way that allows us to be fiscally responsible. So what you're asking for with regards to the budget reserve, at least, will happen on the full floor of the Senate. That's not a decision that's been made by anybody else. It's going to be made here on the floor of the Senate. I hope to convince the Senate that we should set aside 5% in money, as the Council of Economic Advisors has asked us to do. There are many members of my caucus that do not want to do that. But it's time for us as a full Senate to say we're going to be fiscally responsible. And that bill will be coming out of, hopefully, will be coming out of the Tax Committee Friday. And the intent would be to take that up on the floor on Saturday. And Senator Roebling, I hope to convince you that it would be a wise thing to do to take the Council of Economic Advisors' advice and set aside 5%.
Senator Day.
Mr. President, the question I guess I have to the Majority Leader is, tomorrow on the Senate floor, does this mean that I can't offer the governor's bill on transportation to the Minnesota State Senate?
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
My guess is you can, because I believe it spends less money than the bill that will be coming from the Tax Committee today. But I think that's true. I was looking for Senator Murphy, and I believe that's true. So I don't think that this would restrict that at all.
Mr. President and Senator Pogermiller, my bill has no tax increases and all of that in it. So I think it's a little bit, probably a little bit richer than with all the taxes in it.
So, Mr. President, I believe then that would totally be in order, because it is going to be less money than the omnibus transportation bill.
So then I have,
because there is significant revenue in that bill.
Okay, so that.
So I believe it would be in order. Yes.
Thank you.
But
Senator Wergen, Senator Wergen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While the transportation bill might be in order, however, when the E-12 funding bill comes to the floor, that would mean that I can't offer the governor's E-12 funding bill, because it actually spends more money for education than Senator Stump's bill will. And so what we're going to do is shortchange education, because you're not going to allow me, although I had no part, none of us could have any part in the discussion of setting targets, you're not going to allow me the privilege of putting a little bit more money towards education where it should be, because I can't offer the governor's bill, because he is actually far more generous to education than the Senate DFL intends to be.
Senator Pogermiller.
I do believe this governor's total package spends more in total money than Senator Stump's bill. But I think if you divvy out the one-time money versus permanent money, I'm not sure that's true. And Senator Wergen, you can certainly offer the governor's bill. You just have to tell us how you're going to pay for it. That's all. All this amendment says is you have to tell people how you're going to pay for something. That's all this resolution does.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, that would be true in some cases. However, in the case that I'm talking about, whether I would do that or not, it's not true because the Senate education bill, the K-12 bill, spends less money. And by the resolution that you've presented, I cannot spend more money in E-12 than the final amount in Senator Stump's bill. And so I would not be able to offer the governor's bill for E-12.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Wergen, you definitely can offer the governor's bill. You just have to say how you're going to pay for it. And I do think it's an interesting reversal of roles here that someone is accusing the Senate DFL of spending less money than the governor.
Senator
Wergen.
Because
I thought in reading the newspapers that the governor was arguing that we were spending more money.
Mr. President.
But I think it is a fact that Senator Stumpf's bill does spend less money, makes some hard choices. And Senator Wergen, I would be thrilled if you offered the governor's bill and told us how you're going to pay for it. I'd be thrilled.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. President, I don't think you'll find me guilty of wanting to spend more money overall. Overall. I'm talking about E-12, which I believe should be this state's first, number one, top, any other way you can say it, priority. And so, yes, I would spend more in E-12. Thank you.
Mr. President, I
Senator Pogemiller.
Cannot tell you how much I agree with that sentiment. And the session has just begun, Senator Wergen. I think you're going to have an opportunity to demonstrate your commitment,
Senator,
to education.
Neville, did you have a question?
Well, I wanted to ask if I, for example, on the public safety budget bill, the Department of Corrections needs $6 million more for compensation for their employees. We talked about that in finance this morning. I can't put a tax on that finance bill, can't really put a fee on inmates, and I can't move the money from human services with this amendment, which is where apparently the Senate DFL is deciding to put the bulk of the surplus that we have. The place where you're spending lots more than the governor is the human services budget, but this amendment will prevent us from reallocating that budget surplus. So what you're really doing is you're muzzling us. You're preventing us from moving the money from one budget to another because we're not really setting targets. You're doing it indirectly. I almost feel like the movie They Shoot Horses, don't they? Why don't you just shoot us? What good are we if we can't even stand up on the floor and offer an amendment and have you vote on it with your 2-to-1 majority? There's only one thing that the minority people have around here, and that's the right to stand up and talk and the right to offer amendments. And now you guys don't even have enough courage to let us do that. You know, this resolution just smacks of unfairness. Use the power that you have to vote. And you're going to set the agenda anyway, but just let us have our say in the process.
Mr. President?
Senator Olson.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, I'm trying to reconcile your answer to Senator Wergen that all she has to do is say where the revenue is going to come from. But item 3 on our resolution from our discussion in Rules Committee yesterday and even today is that if that revenue isn't within that bill, she can't propose For example, if it were one-time money, and that's sitting over in the tax bill, she's not allowed to say, I would take that money from there, because that is ruled out by number three. So I don't think your response was accurate to Senator Wergen. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Senator Pogemiller?
Mr. President, Senator Olson, I think the rule would prevent you from taking money from a different bill. So because the budget resolution, well, this year we're going to set it here on the floor, hopefully, the reserve amount. And I suppose people could start trying to spend that money tomorrow or when we get that bill up here. I hadn't thought about that, Senator Bach. I suppose they could try to start spending that money that day. But I think Senator Wergen, what I said to Senator Wergen is that she could propose a tax increase to spend additional money in the K-12 bill, or propose revenue that's not tied up somewhere else. Senator Olson, let me think a little more about that, because I think what you're suggesting is, should we allow someone to make an amendment to take money out of the budget reserve and spend it instead? Let me think about that.
In the meantime, Senator Vandiver.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, I think that's kind of an important issue, because I had that question written down as to whether money could be taken out of the budget reserve and used in an amendment. But will the majority leader yield for another question?
He will yield. Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, Rule 1 then says, without a corresponding increase in net revenue, the bill is out of order if it increases the appropriation. So the question is, if you cannot do that within the bill, that is, if you couldn't increase revenue somehow within that amendment or that bill, well, I guess maybe that is my question. Can you increase revenue in that bill or not?
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I think you could. Let's take the natural resources bill. Presumably, it would be in the purview of that bill to suggest an increase in fees, because that's in the purview of that bill. So I think there are opportunities to increase revenue.
Senator Vandiver. You grab the... Try it, Senator Limmers. You got your red light on?
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, so it's only if it's a fee, if there are fees in the bill that you could do that, or... you said you wanted to think about the question about moving money out of the budget reserve. Would it be possible for us to table this until we got a little clarification and could discuss it further?
Senator Artman.
Well, Mr. President, I think we've just engaged for 40 minutes in a fake debate. Not a real debate. We've talked about what might happen with the transportation bill. We've talked about what might happen with the public safety bill, Senator Neville. We've talked about what might happen with the E-12 debate. What might happen with the natural resources debate. We could have just been debating the bills. Maybe what the majority should do, if they like this rule, why don't you just write a script each day? Just tell us what our part is. You can write speaker number 3 and speaker number 4. You can tell us what our positions can be and what our amendments can be. Then we don't have to go to committee. We don't have to do anything. We can just show up here, and the script will be on my desk, just like when the Secretary of the Senate tells me what motion to make. It can just be written out for me. You can just take all the heart out of it, all the thought out of it, all of the concern for the state of Minnesota. Just take it all out, write the script, and leave it for me.
Senator Sanjum.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, we've met a couple of times on this, and obviously I think we have a process here that is probably not going to work here. As was pointed out maybe in tax committee today, some things just aren't ready, and I'm not sure this is ready at this point. We could go forward and have the 44-23 vote, and there would probably be bitterness through the rest of the session over this, and for that matter, every time we had a challenging amendment, and we'd challenge the chair, and we'd have that vote, and we'd go on, and live with that bitterness. In fact, even nurture that bitterness. I'm not so sure we just shouldn't send this back to Rules Committee and have a little more discussion on it. I think we can make it through the higher ed bill today without. Without a lot of frenzy, I think, and it would seem to me that in the spirit of this Senate and what we're trying to do, that we ought to just move this back, have some more discussion, get some more ideas from our relative from our caucus members, because there are things here that I hadn't heard before personally, and I think they're important things. And the very idea that we might gag somebody or Senator Day, perhaps, you know, there's questions about the transportation bill, the replacement bills. I think they're all important, and I think they're part of the process that we need to go through in terms of trying to assess what we're trying to do, at least with these rules, against what's best for the Senate, and as I think Senator Ortman pointed out, what's best for the state of Minnesota. So I wonder if we just couldn't move this back to Rules Committee, have some additional discussion on it, and see if we can't find some a process that might work better. And I would suggest, I believe today we're going to be able to move through this higher ed bill, and you know, that's not going to be a problem.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, you know, based on Senator Senjum's suggestion, I would move to lay the resolution on the table.
Okay. On the Pogemiller motion to lay the resolution on the table, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
What is it under? Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills as special orders for immediate consideration. Senate File 1989, which is the higher ed bill, and Senate File 1925, which is the ag and vets bill. And I think let's take them in those order, in that order.
Who's got the? That's general orders number 50. That's number 53 on general orders. First bill, number 52 on general orders. Number 53, excuse me. Senate File 1989, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. This is the Senate Higher Education Bill. First of all, I wanted to start with just making a few comments. I have to say that, personally, I'm very dissatisfied with this bill. We were asked to live within inflation. That's what we got, $296 million. And so all we could really come up with is a status quo budget, which funds the core functions of MNSCU and the University of Minnesota and our financial aid program. I do want to thank my committee members and my staff, my partisan and nonpartisan staff and personal staff, for how hard they worked on this. And we tried to make ourselves as available as possible to members. So if there were members that I wasn't able to consult with in terms of any last-minute changes, I apologize. We were not able to fund hardly any new initiatives. I'd say that the GI Bill was a new financial aid initiative that we did fund because we thought there were compelling reasons to do that. But in terms of MNSCU or the university's new initiatives, we did not fund those. We focused it on their core functions, inflation, compensation, some money for technology. Our hope was to hold down tuition, and we still hope that by funding inflation, the tuition increases will only be in the 4-5% range. But we certainly made no progress in returning to the traditional two-thirds, one-third split that we always had, two-thirds of the cost of a student's education being paid for by the state and one-third paid by the student. We're at about a 50-50% right now, and that slide happened very fast. It happened in the last 6 or 7 years. And so I believe that if we would work on it, we could get back to that two-thirds, one-third split. But unfortunately, we're not making any progress this year, this biennium. Members, on your desk is the spreadsheet, and I want to just point out the sixth column from the right is the important column for you to look at. That has all the increases. The rest of it is you know, agency requests, governor's budget, et cetera. But if you want to know what actually the dollar amounts are in the bill, that's the column to look at. I think I mentioned the $296 million is a 12% increase over the 06-07 base. And with financial aid, we have a total of $61.4 million, and that includes $10 million for the GI Bill. So we are slightly over the base in financial aid. We were able to do this without a lot of new dollars, but able to help students because we had a projected surplus of $25.5 million. We had $21.3 million in savings because of changes in the federal Pell Grant, $2.5 million in federal matching funds, and $12.1 million in new general fund revenue. With the state grant program, we made several changes, and if you're following along on the bill, it's page 3. We did make an increase in $400 in the tuition and fee maximum, and we did increase the living and miscellaneous expense allowance by $200. Then we fund the Minnesota GI Bill, but we put a capped appropriation on it of $10 million, and this is for veterans, returning from active duty, I think since 1991, and we had to put a cap on it of $1,000 a semester, and that is after all other financial aid programs are accounted for, so it's the last dollar in. And Senator Robes, if you have any questions in more detail, Senator Robes could answer them. Senator Lynch was also very involved in developing this legislation. Interstate tuition reciprocity, we owe North Dakota. We have more students, Minnesota students, going to North Dakota than North Dakota students coming to Minnesota. So that's $4 million in the bill. We increased the child care grants by $2.9 million, and that is a per grant increase of $2,300 to $2,600. We increased a couple of library programs, Minitex and Learning Network of Minnesota. And we have a program called Intervention for College Attendance Program Grants. We're really concerned about getting more non-traditional students into higher education. And the Office of Higher Education runs a couple programs. One is called ICAP, and the other one is called Get Ready. And we looked at the need and the capacity, and we made increases in those two areas. Senator Sharon asked for an increase in the campus compact. This was a program you may remember that former Senator Larson championed, and we did give them an increase of $70,000. Senator Skoy asked for a one-time grant to the Augsburg College Step-Up Program, which is for chemically dependent students, so that they are kept in a sober environment. And this has been a very successful program, and they think a one-time appropriation will allow them to move to the next step in terms of serving students. We are giving money to the University of Minnesota to establish a Dakota language immersion program. We have a problem with indigenous languages in the state, Dakota and Ojibwe. We're running out of native speakers, and children are no longer learning the language. So in order to save the language, we need to train teachers to teach students, and that's what this will do in the Dakota language. Senator Clark asked us for a loan repayment assistance program, and this actually brought up a bigger issue, and we're asking the Office of Higher Education to study loan repayment assistance programs in general to see if that should be part of our financial aid mix that we offer as a state, especially in areas where there's a market demand. In this case, there already is in existence a nonprofit that helps attorneys who are legal aid attorneys pay off their debt. And so they're able to stay working as legal aid attorneys, and they aren't forced to go into higher paying jobs or into the private sector. And we need those legal aid attorneys to help us, so we decided to put some money into that loan repayment assistance program. Senator Lantz brought us a bill for $50,000 one time for the Washington Center for Internships and Academic Seminars for scholarships for low-income students to be able to spend a semester in Washington. We fund in the higher ed bill family practice residencies because there's been a shortage, and we fund them all over the state. And I've been, they were really funded at uneven levels, so I've been trying to kind of even them out so they all get about approximately the same amount. And so the we did a slight increase this year. I think it was 4% for the family residency programs at Mayo and at United Family Medicine. Like most of our bills that you'll see that come before you, we are doing a compensation-based increase of 3.25%, so that's in my bill as well. We authorize the Department of Higher Education to be able to transfer between financial aid programs if there's a surplus. We move on page 7 to the appropriations for MNSCU. It gives the total appropriation amount, and I talked about the increase, which I believe is $136 million. And out of that, Senator Bach asked for a small increase. I think it was only $40,000 to the Cook County Higher Education Consortium. With MNSCU, you'll see on the spreadsheet that we really fund the top three issues. We fund inflation, we put a little bit of money into technology, and we provide some money for initiatives to recruit and retain students traditionally underrepresented in higher education to help prepare them for college, encourage their enrollment, and provide services to them. We think this is really important. We have a workforce shortage that's projected in the future. We have a decline in the traditional college age population. So we need to both bring more people into our state to go to college, and we also need to be getting students whose parents were not college graduates to be prepared for college and to be successful in college and to attend college. The other incentive is to go to a flat tuition system. We have learned that when Minnesota kids go to Minnesota colleges, 80% of them stay in the state. When non-Minnesota kids go to Minnesota colleges, somewhere between 60 and 70% of them remain in the state. So this bill both funds the two-year colleges so that they all can go to flat tuition, resident-only rate, as well as ask MNSCU to put together an implementation plan for the four-year colleges to go to a resident-only rate. I think about a dozen of our colleges do that right now, mostly in the rural areas. I think Bemidji is one of them. If the university, Crookston and Morris have a resident-only rate. So it's been recognized as an important recruitment tool for our rural colleges. Now we're going to use it as a tool to recruit students from outside our state. On page 8, lines 29 through 33, that's clarification of previous law about how the competitive compensation dollars that we allocated in the last biennium are to be spent. Senator Roebling and Senator Wieger were both working on issues around textbook cost and textbook reform, and we did appropriate $200,000 for startup costs for a pilot textbook rental program. And later on in the bill, there's more language on how bookstores and professors and publishers can kind of help reduce the textbook costs for students. And we get to that section of the bill. If you have any questions, I would turn it over to Senator Wieger, who's been working very hard with students on this proposal, as well as Senator Roebling has for several years as well. Then on page 9, we get to the appropriation for the University of Minnesota. Again, it's focused on compensation, advancing education, and inflation, and any new initiatives that they want to do, they're told to fund that out of reallocation or fund it out of your own dollars, because there is no money in this bill for new initiatives. Thanks. We do believe very strongly in the U of M Mayo partnership for research in biotechnology and medical genomics. And although there's a one-time appropriation that I believe is being funded in another division, I felt like it needed to be in the higher ed base. So, and Senator Lynch and Senator Senjum have both been working very hard in this area. And so we did put $20 million into the base. We were able to accommodate it in our tails. It's not in this year's budget, but it's in the next biennium and from then on. One small issue, getting back to the family practice residency programs, Mayo Medical School was the supervisor of a program at St. Cloud Hospital, and that's being transferred to the University of Minnesota. We don't usually designate dollars for programs, but we had kind of an unusual situation with the industrial relations education program at the U, where they were really being pinched for dollars as a special. So we did appropriate some money to them and encourage them to maybe look for a new home with Minsku, perhaps, might be a better fit for them than being in the Carlson School. The medical school, we support the Mayo Medical School because we asked them to start their medical school several decades ago. So we do a capitation for medical students, and in this bill we do a slight increase, $79,000, and a slight increase for their family practice residency program. We have asked the Office of Higher Education to do a series of studies. That starts on page 13 with section 7. First of all, we want them to look at the state grant. Is the state grant meeting the needs of the students of the state? We're especially concerned about part-time students, and we're concerned about independent students, students who don't have family support. And we have tried in the changes in our financial aid formula to keep those students in mind. They're also going to be doing a study on participation rates by income and persistence and graduation rates of state grant recipients compared to students who did not receive state grants. I mentioned the loan repayment program report. Senator Olson asked us if we would transfer the American Indian Scholarship Program from the K-12 from the Department of Education to the Office of Higher Education, and we didn't quite feel like we were ready or had the authority to do that, but we are asking the Office of Higher Education to look at that. How would we transfer the staff? They want to have an office in Bemidji. The University of Bemidji State has offered office space. I think the Indian Affairs Council has also offered office space. But they did want the scholarship program to have a presence in northern Minnesota. That was discontinued a few years ago when we had the budget crisis. On line 15 is the language about non-resident tuition in the two-year colleges. There's another study on line 15 on the whole issue of merit scholarships. And this was the area that Senator Roebling had worked on with the governor that we had originally funded at a small amount, $12 million in the second year. But when I took a look at our financial aid program and how we were actually below the base and that we had really not wanted to fund new programs and that the members of the committee are really not sure that merit-based scholarships is the direction to go, I thought we were putting the cart before the horse, that we really needed to finish the study and come back and look at this. And so I did offer an amendment in finance to transfer the money into the regular financial aid program. The textbook rental study is a language is on line 16. The Senator Thomas Soni asked for a study on the Mesabi Range higher education needs, and that's going to be conducted by the University of Minnesota and Minsku. Then in Article 2 is more of the policy of the bill and less of the appropriations. Article 2, starting on page 17, is these are mostly technical changes. We talk about the funding policy for for the higher education starting on 17.23, which states our 67% policy. I think we should keep with that goal and not give up and say it's okay for us to, you know, not, you know, divide it with the students 50-50 instead of doing the two-thirds, one-third. Section 3 is really existing language moved from a different section of the statute, and our state higher education objectives are going to be redone. We're developing an accountability system for higher education, but we're not quite ready to go with new objectives yet. Section 4 cites sources of information that are used to determine the appropriations for the U and MNSCU. Section 7 specifies reports MNSCU and the U must submit to the legislature. Section 6 directs the U and MNSCU to develop their budget priorities in accordance with the statewide objectives. Section 7 is the definition of resident student for tuition purposes. Section 8 is Senator Dill's request that students starting college have a class on personal financial management. Section 9 is technical. Section 10 is language that's passed this body before regarding marketing of credit card students on campuses. We know that we have a tremendous amount of loan borrowing problem by students, and we don't need the colleges to be pushing credit cards on campuses or to be making any kind of profit off the students' use of credit cards. And students, you know, I've heard students tell me they, you know, signed up for the credit card for the free T-shirt. So it's hard. It's hard enough when they get things in the mail and they get flyers at their dorm doors or at their homes, without it also happening on campus. And this was actually legislation that Senator Sieben and I have worked on. Section 11 and Section 12 remove obsolete language. Section 13 is clarifying language. Section 14 assigns the responsibility for administering the Minnesota GI Bill to the Office of Higher Education. Section 15 extends some expiration dates for some advisory councils. Section 16 is technical. Section 17 is some new reciprocity reporting language. Section 18 adds a requirement for for-profit institutions that they have to be participating in the federal Pell Grant program before they can be licensed in our state. Section 19 reverts back to the state grant program, and when we change the percentage of family responsibility that helps our students, and it costs us $16 million. And in Section 20, when we look at the cost of attendance and we look at actual tuition and fees instead of average tuition and fees, it costs us, I think it's $4 million, isn't it? Oh, 10. It costs us $10 million. Okay, that was right. We had a problem a few years ago with our surplus that we would generate in the state grant, and it would revert back to the general fund. And one year we lost $40 million because of that. So I worked on with stakeholders to come up with a way that that could be reappropriated by adjusting the living and miscellaneous expense allowance. And we're going to continue with this another 2 years and see how it goes. So far, you know, I think we've saved $25 million for students through that mechanism. Section subdivision 19 specifies the timing in which we're supposed to get the cost projections on the state grant spending from the Office of Higher Education. Section 23, this has to do with students who have to withdraw from school to join the military, that they're considered continuing students so that they can, they don't, in terms of getting child care money, so they don't have to become new applicants. They can still get their child care money when they return. On line 32 of page 26, that is where we increase the per applicant of the child care grant from $2,300 to $2,600. Section 25 is technical. Section 26 adds a requirement for institutions that want to participate in the self-loan program that I that we added earlier. You have to be participating in the federal Pell Grant. Sections 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, and 32 make technical corrections. Section 33 authorizes the Office of Higher Education to do interest swaps in order to get better loan rates. Section 34, 35, 36, and 37 make technical changes. Section 38 authorizes colleges and universities to award work-study grants to students who are only going half-time, for example, like in the summer. Section 39 increases the revenue bond authority for the Higher Education Facilities Authority. This is for private colleges to be able to use this program to borrow money. Sections 40 to 43 make language changes to reflect the expansion of the intervention for college attendance program that I made, that I talked about earlier, that we did put a little extra money. They will go down and work with kids as young as fourth grade and get them interested in college and get them planning for college and talk about what they have to do and take in terms of taking rigorous courses. Let's see. Section 44 makes some changes on the Minsky board, and Section 45 makes some changes on the advisory board that recommends people to the governor. And Section 47 deletes obsolete language. Section 48 is the recommendation from the Textbook Advisory Task Force to reduce the cost of textbooks for students that I referred to earlier. Section 49 is the sets the tuition rate for the two-year colleges, and we do pay for that in the bill. Section 50 just says that Minsky activity receipts are appropriated to the Minsky board. It's not subject to the budgetary control of the Commissioner of Finance. And Section 51 clarifies the manner in which Minsky deposits those receipts. Section 52 is has to do with the Minnesota College Savings Program participants, and right now the state is matching. If you're low income, the state will match your contribution to $300, and this raises it. It's being underutilized, the program, so this raises it to $400. Section 53 directs the Regent Candidate Advisory Council to submit its recommendations for regents to a joint legislative committee. It makes changes in that joint committee to more reflect the composition of the joint convention. It keeps the governor in the loop, but it allows the committee to actually make recommendations. Section 55 prohibits the assessment of late fees. When the payment of educational assistance for veterans is delayed, we did a number of things in here to make sure to ease the reentry of veterans into higher education. Section 56 is the Minnesota GI Bill program, establishes the program. It says what the definition of a veteran is, who's eligible, and how much money they get. Basically, they get $1,000 per semester, $3,000 a year, and $10,000 a total. And we allow the money to be spent in the first year. So if we have greater demand, then we don't really know what the demand's going to be. But if we have greater demand, we could come back next year and appropriate some additional money. Section 57 are repealers. Article 3 has to do with how we regulate private institutions. And we basically have moved the regulation for degree-granting institutions into Chapter 136, whether they're for-profit or not-for-profit. And we've moved the non-degree-granting regulation, it has a higher level of regulation, into Chapter 141. And so we had to make kind of a bunch of changes in order to do that. And this actually is still a work in progress, and we are going to have more legislation introduced and be discussing it more as a policy committee and my committee, and possibly, probably bringing more changes into the conference committee down the road. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I have a technical amendment, and then I can take, Madam Chair, and then I can take some questions. I have the A-12 amendment.
Senator Pappas offers the A-12 amendment.
Senator Pappas moves to amend Senate File 1989 as follows, page 3, line 7. This is the A-12 amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, as I mentioned, it just changes a $100,000 line item that was incorrect on page 3.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is there a discussion on the bill? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. I wish to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call.
That'd be for the duration of the bill. Madam President, members, I move that further proceedings be dispensed with and that the sergeant be directed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Prevails. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm glad you all could return to the Senate chamber. We were kind of dispersed, and I looked back, and no one was sitting in the chairs. But we do have some important policy discussions to have at this moment. I would like to offer the A-11 amendment.
Senator Limmer offers the A-11 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 1989 as follows, page 3, line 7. This is the A-11 amendment.
Madam President and members, this particular amendment may not mean a lot to you because it's making a lot of statutory references and dollar amounts, but I want to let you know that a funny thing happened to this bill on the way to the Senate. The governor's original request for $30 million for GI benefits was shrunk to $10 million. Now, the governor's Office of Higher Education has reduced that dollar amount between $15 and $20 million. And I want to make sure that our veterans have that are returning from combat duties overseas have as much benefit to a GI benefit package as possible. The amendment before you, and by the way, Senator Pogemiller, I know you're here. I prepared this with the idea that the resolution that we just discussed, I wrote it that way so we can move some numbers around. It is a bold step in a new democracy, and so I might be the first one. So I'm going to try it. The amendment increases the funding in the bill on the GI provision by $10 million more, for a total appropriation of $20 million to ensure that no veteran is without funds. Now, if we only had $10 million, there is certainly a gap, 50% gap, and of course there would be veterans that may not be able to participate in that program. Now, the amendment was written to also remove a provision that a part-time student would only qualify for a maximum of $500. That's what happened in the bill. They reduced the $1,000 benefit to $500 if you were a part-time student. This restores that $1,000 classification. Also, the amendment is also paid for by taking $10 million from the financial aid budget of the Office of Higher Education. Now, some people may think we're gonna have a hard problem on or that we're shorting state grant recipients, but this doesn't stop state grant recipients from getting money. Some of this money was moved over on top of the increased appropriation that we already have offered them. We changed that formula. So no one is going to get any less than what they offered before, were offered before, or expected. It's just in this particular case, we're wanting to make sure that no veteran comes back to the state of Minnesota and does not have funds under the Minnesota GI Bill that would hurt them or have them not receive the funds that other GIs would get. I would ask for a roll call vote.
There will be a roll call. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Limmer. You know, if we had unlimited money, I would love to do this, but I do feel like we have a commitment to all our students as well as our veterans who are coming back from war. what Senator Limmer is doing is he is paying for the program by taking the money out of the state grant program change that went from average tuition to actual tuition. So this does hurt Minsky students who we had to make this change about 4 or 5 years ago when we had the budget crisis. I think that we don't exactly know how much we're going to need to spend for the GI Bill, which is why I front-loaded it. So I put $10 million in, but all $10 million could be spent in the first year. We don't really have a very good sense of how much we're going to need. And partly it's because that we already have a lot of benefits that GIs can tap into if they're eligible. We have the federal Pell Grant. We have the state regular state grant. The National Guard has a tuition and textbook reimbursement grant program. There are federal military or veterans educational benefits. So you have the federal GI Bill, but that's not limited to the Montgomery GI Bill, the GI Bill kicker, the federal tuition assistance program, vocational rehabilitation benefits. So we are doing a good job by our veterans, and I think Minnesota is making a good statement that we also want to help our veterans. But I don't think we need to do it at the expense of the rest of our students. I think that $10 million is going to be enough for us to try this program out and see what the need is. So I would urge members to vote no.
Is there further discussion, Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Pappas, when you started your comments, you said you didn't really know how much the veteran program was going to cost. So you put $10 million on. The last thing you just said was, I think we have enough for our veterans. Which is it? Which is it? Now, $10 million certainly is a lot of money to talk about, but, you know, the governor was anticipating that it may cost as much as $30 million. However, in improved budget analysis agreed that it probably is closer to $15 to $20 million. Your proposal still is not enough to cover the $15 to $20 million. You also stated that this is cutting students on their scholarship programs. I don't know if you heard me before, Senator Pappas, but we already increased that budget allotment for state grant recipients. We've already done that. This doesn't cut out of that budget. This removes it out of the increase that was taken away ultimately from the veteran budget and pushed over. Now, I don't seem to understand why we can't recognize all of the GIs that come home after they've done their stint for us overseas. I don't understand it. Now, there may be federal grant programs out there, but nevertheless, we as a policy, even by the proposal you have, is giving a nod to our GI returning citizens coming home. And I don't understand why we can't give them the full allotment that's due to them. We're not hurting students. We're recognizing their need. We've actually analyzed our budget. The governor's budget was $30 million. We determined that it was a little less, so we're being responsible about it. And we're not blowing the bank or this budget because we're balancing out the budget according to that House file, or not House file, resolution that was before us. So it's truly done in the spirit of cooperation. And I would really hope that our members here on the Senate floor might want to lay down the partisan issues and just help our GIs that are returning home. That's all this is about. It shouldn't be a crisis. It shouldn't be anything more than that, and we're trying to keep our budget balanced as it's been proposed before the Senate.
Is there further discussion on the A-11 amendment? Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Limmer, thank you very much, Senator Pappas. I would speak to the senator's amendment. And as you know, Senator Limmer, I'm a veteran myself, and I worked with Senator Lynch and Senator Pappas, the entire Veterans and Agriculture Committee, to work on this bill. So it's one that's near and dear to my heart, and I think between Senator Vickerman and myself, you won't find two people who are more supportive of veterans. So we absolutely agree that we've been trying to do as
much as we can for the returning veterans, not only in terms of the GI Bill, but of for many extra benefits that they'll be getting coming back. We're trying to help them out of contracts and do as much as we can to support them. I would just remind this body that as we worked on this bill, we worked very closely with the governor's office, the attorney general's office, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We checked in frequently with the chair of the United Veterans Groups, the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, and then we had members, active duty members of the Minnesota Guard. So we were hearing from active duty members and veterans on this issue. And everyone would love to put a lot more money into the Minnesota GI Bill. This is a beginning point, and everyone came to agreement on this bill as we brought it to the Higher Education Committee. You mentioned the half-time, half-benefit provision, and that is actually something that I believe was brought to us as a recommendation by the active duty military folks themselves as a way to spread the dollars out there to most veterans. We want to cover as many veterans as we can with this benefit. We all know we have to be responsible in our budgeting, and this proposal, as carried in Senator Pappas's omnibus bill, is a broad, bipartisan-supported, stakeholders consensus approach, and I would encourage the members to vote for the original version. Thank you.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Erickson Ropes, first I want to thank you for your military service to our country. I didn't have that opportunity to serve, and I believe I owe it even further more to our returning GIs to make sure that they get every benefit they deserve. As of last night, I had discussion with Governor's staff, and as of last night, they claimed that this budget was still drastically underfunded. Now, maybe it's minimally funded, but it's not. It's still, in their opinion, drastically underfunded, and they have major concerns about this dollar amount.
Is there further discussion on the A11 amendment? Seeing none, the roll call has been requested. The secretary will take the roll. Members are reminded that Senate's under call. Has everyone voted who desires to vote? Senate is under call. Clerk will, the secretary will close the board. There being 25 ayes and 40 nays, the motion, Senator Chaudhry votes no. There being 25 ayes and 41 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on Senate File 1989? I'm sorry. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A-10 amendment, please.
Senator Ingebretson offers the A-10 amendment.
A-10.
Secretary will report the amendment. Does it say limmer on it?
Yes, it does. Yes.
Senator Ingebretson moves to amend Senate File 1989 as follows. Page 20, delete Section 7. This is Amendment A-10.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This amendment is in regards to, as it states, Section 7 of the bill with regards to resident tuition and private financial aid eligibility. I would like to have you look at the Section 1, which refers to the part of the qualifications for the for this particular bill is that the number one high school attendance within the state of Minnesota for three or more years, and I revert down to letter C, which says a qualifying for resident tuition under the section, an individual who is not a citizen or permanent resident of the United States must provide the college or university within the affidavit of the individual will file an application to become a resident at the earliest opportunity the individual is eligible to do so. Folks, what we're talking about here is what's been referred to in the media and what was referred to during the election process, at least in my district, and it was very loud, was the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act was attempted to be passed last year or last session. And what it is basically it's allowing tuition for kids in our state that are not registered legal residents of the state of Minnesota. During my campaign, I spent countless days walking the beat. Well, I guess that was in my other job. Actually knocking on doors. And one of the biggest things that we did talk about out there was education and health care. And what came up about education is what are you going to do about tuition rates? What are you going to do about reducing the cost of our kids going to college? And one of the things that was brought up was we understand that they're trying to actually, at the state of Minnesota down at the Capitol, pay for illegal immigrants' tuition or give them the same rate as residents of our state of Minnesota. And they were very, very angry about that. And I guess I have to really, really agree with the concept in that if we're going to be charged with spending the dollars down here and we're being talked about and asked how we're going to finance education in the state of Minnesota, there's been talk about freezing tuition. There's talk about other ways of coming up with money for tuition for our children. One of the things that we should not be doing is we should not be paying for those who are not actually legally here. Furthermore, according to the bill, you're going to have to make an attempt at the earliest opportunity, and there's still no guarantee that they're actually going to become citizens. Now, folks, what we're doing here is we're looking at spending $8 million. I would much sooner see, and I think most of the members in this body would agree, that $8 million be spent on our resident children here in the state of Minnesota. So with that, I ask that all members vote in favor of this amendment. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the A-10 amendment? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to clarify something. There's no cost to this. If Senator Ingebrigtsen is successful in removing the DREAM Act from the bill, it's not going to lower tuition for any of our students. This bill doesn't cost anything at all. All it's going to do is hurt some hardworking students who are brought here, no fault of their own. Yes, it's true their parents are undocumented, but they have no control over that. They've grown up here. They feel like they're Minnesotans. They're Americans. They play by the rules. They study hard. They get good grades. And at some point, they find out, maybe their junior year, that they can't go to college, which is their dream, because they have to pay the international rate, the non-resident rate. They're going to be with us. The reality is, members, we have to deal with this whole issue of immigrants and immigration. Immigrants have frankly revitalized communities and neighborhoods. We're a country of immigrants. We used to have, well, maybe not. We've always had a mixed view of immigrants. When our grandparents were immigrants, you know, that was one thing, but now that we're not immigrants, we're not so sure about the new guy in town. And I'm kind of getting off the subject here, but what I wanted to say is that this is not where the $8 million comes in. The $8 million comes in paying and going to a flat tuition rate for all Minsku two-year campuses. That's a workforce development issue. If Senator Ingebrigtsen doesn't want us to do that, he needs to offer another amendment. This will probably impact, we don't even know, maybe 500 students spread over all of Minsku and the U. It's a marginal cost. It's not any actual dollars to the institution. It just means that these students can pursue their dream of higher education. In the meantime, we all know that we need federal immigration reform and that the feds need to develop a path for whoever, hopefully these children, so they can become legal residents and become citizens, because that's what they truly desire to be.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Pappas yield for a question?
Senator Pappas, will you yield? Senator Pappas yields.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Pappas, I don't serve on the higher education committees, and I have not, but my question for you would be, wouldn't these same students be able to qualify to go to the college? They would just have to pay the higher tuition rates. And on an annual basis, how much is that? Because I think they can still go. It's not that we're saying they can't go. They just can't get the reduced tuition rate.
Senator Pappas.
We do have about a dozen campuses that charge just resident tuition rate now, but for some of the campuses, it would be double or 2.5 times as much. And they don't qualify for any of our state or federal financial aid programs, so they're really not able to go. They're not going. That's partly why there's no cost to this bill, is because it's not like they're paying the non-resident rate now. They're just not going to college. They end up in some kind of underground economy. They're unable to go to school, unable to work. We can't afford to lose the talents and the skills of anyone in our state. We're facing a workforce shortage, and these are bright kids. If you had sat and heard them in my committee or met with any of the students, they're there. They want to be dentists. They want to be doctors. They want to be veterinarians. They want to be nurses. They want to fulfill some of those jobs that we have a shortage of. They're A students. They're taking AP classes and IB classes. They're top scholars in their school because they kind of get it. They're more motivated. A lot of immigrants who come to our country are more motivated, and they do well because they know that education is the future for success in their family and in their community, and they work hard. And I just think it goes so against our principles of hard work will lead to success to not allow these kids to go to college.
Is there further discussion? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a co-author of the bill as it stands individually called the DREAM Act, and I agree with Senator Pappas that these young students can become a very real asset to us at some time in the future, and I do think we are going to see some federal immigration reform that will enable them possibly to come on that path to citizenship someday. However, I am going to support the amendment that's being offered because the bill is a standalone bill on general orders right now. And there is very real concern that the higher ed bill may never become law if it stays in there. And so I think we can remove it. Senator Pappas has already said there is no fiscal note with it. It doesn't have to be on an appropriation bill. So I think it would be best if we removed it now and just looked at the other standalone bill as that comes up before us on general orders. So that's what I would suggest to members, because we know there's a lot of controversy over this bill and over the proposed DREAM Act, as they call it. But I don't think that we should jeopardize our higher ed bill because of that.
Is there further discussion? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I have a couple comments. Senator Pappas, if I could just ask you, if these students go to 4 years of college and then on to 2 years of college, and I agree, we need those kinds of bright young individuals in the state of Minnesota. We certainly do. My question to you is, and maybe it's more of a legal question, is are they...
Senator Ingebrigtsen, are you asking Senator Pappas to yield?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Senator Pappas, do you yield?
I apologize for that.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
My question would be to you is, if they get these certificates and they go out into the workforce, are they, without legal status, going to be able to find a job in the state of Minnesota?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I really don't know. It may be that they can't. I don't know. But perhaps over the next 4 years, if Congress establishes a path to legalization for these kids, they would be able to have a job. And better that we educate them and then they're qualified to work a job than that we lose them into some kind of underworld or underground economy because they're so disillusioned and they're so frustrated that they can't do either. They can't get a job and they can't work. I mean, they can't go to school.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. That just a comment. That might be putting the cart before the horse, especially when we're in times of dollars and cent needs here for our students in Minnesota. My other comment would be to the rest of the body is that if we allow this, I think under federal statute, we may be just opening the door to other out-of-state folks coming to our community, coming to our state, and us having to allow them actually in-state tuition, resident tuition. So again, I ask for your support on this amendment, and I also ask for a roll call.
There will be a roll call. Senator Rosen.
Madam President, was that me? Senator Rosen, okay, I didn't hear that correctly. I would also, Madam President, like to concur with Senator Roebling. I do feel that having the DREAM Act in this higher ed bill does put this bill in jeopardy. And I would like to see that there would be some cooperation with Senator Pappas with this bill as far as what is troubling this body about the affidavit and the filing from this student to make sure that they do become legal. I actually do think that this is a small percentage of students that would apply for this, and I will support this bill if it comes up on general orders. But as it stands right now, I will be voting for the amendment.
Is there further discussion on the A-10 amendment? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, I rise to oppose the Ingebrigtsen amendment. We're a state of immigrants. We should be welcoming these young people that are attending our high schools. They're going to school for at least 3 years. We need smart young people to be part of our growing economy, and I support Senator Pappas' effort.
Is there further discussion? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I, too, oppose this amendment, and I hear Senator Roebling and Senator Rosen talk about their support of this measure if it were to be a standalone bill. And I think that we have to have courage in our body to do what we think is best. And if, in fact, by doing so, we end up with a battle and a bill down the road due to vetoes or due to disagreement, so be it. We'll deal with that. And I think that it's more important for us to think through thoughtfully the aspects of the bill. And if we feel that it's the right direction for our state, then stand united and say, this is something we think is important. And I know not everybody actually thinks that so. And in that case, I respect that choice. But if, in fact, this particular act is something that members do support, then I ask that they be willing to stand up and say that. And one more thing about why I think the DREAM Act is so important in this bill is that we are battling a tremendous amount of dysfunction in our core cities right now. And I look at the increasing crime, and I think that we can always point to the underlying cause as despair and a lack of hopefulness. And I think with our changing demographics, anything we can do to insert hope and a belief in one's ability to have a better future than their parents is something that we ought to do whenever possible. And so I rise in support of the provision and ask those who are willing to support the provision as a standalone also be willing to take a chance and vote for it within this bill. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, just to summarize to something, first of all, Senator Ingebrigtsen said, is that there are 12 or 13 other states that have already passed this provision, including large immigration states like New York, Texas, and California. So I, you know, they already have the option to pay resident tuition in those states. So I seriously doubt if those students would move here for this benefit. Texas actually legalized it when President George Bush was the governor of Texas. Also, I wanted to make sure that members know that the Minnesota Chamber does support this provision. They kind of get it about the workforce needs. They know that we're going to need migrants and immigrants to move to our state if we're going to be able to meet the workforce needs and the talent needs for that our economy needs in the future. You know, a lot of times this bill is a combination of policy and money, and a lot of times we do have a mixture. It looked like in the other body that this proposal would be folded into the omnibus bill, so I just made the decision that I thought it needed to be here rather than a standalone bill. I think if you support this legislation, then I would urge you to vote no to the amendment, because I think otherwise it's not very easily explainable. You either support it or you don't. And I would really appreciate people supporting it, keeping it in the bill, and voting no to the amendment.
The Secretary will take the roll on the A-10 amendment. Senate is under call. Members will please vote. There being 23 ayes, Secretary will close the board. There being 23 ayes and 43 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Thank you. Nice break.
There further discussion on Senate File 1989, Senator Dill.
Mr. President, members, there's two items in this bill I'd like to draw your attention to, and to thank Senator Pappas for including them. One is a ban on or some kind of restrictions on the marketing of credit cards to students at post-secondary institutions and the sale of student information. And we all know that there's problems with credit card debt in our society, and I think that's very appropriate to try to cut down on the promotion of credit cards on campus. And the second thing I'd like to draw your attention to is that there is a provision that I had in a bill that is part of this omnibus bill that will require in Minsku that incoming freshmen get some training on personal financial management right off the bat to help them better manage their student debt and their life on campus and hopefully get through the system with less debt and in a better position financially. And at the University of Minnesota, we can't order them to do that, but the language and the provision does encourage them to provide this personal financial management to incoming freshmen. So those are two items I'm pleased to see that are in the bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 1989, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Mr. President, I have the A14 amendment.
The Secretary will report the Limmer A14 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 1989 as follows. Page 17 after line 4, insert. This is Amendment A-14.
Senator Limmer on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, our pages will be passing out a flyer representing the increases that our students have been experiencing all the way back to 1971. It's kind of interesting to look at the impact that students have in the funding that we require of them for their own college education. As you begin to look at it, I want to point out, I'll wait till they get passed out, but I want you to know that over the years I've been here, I've asked whoever the chief author is on these amendments. I've always asked them a simple question when it came to the higher education budget. Will that budget increase our students' tuition? I think I've asked that almost every single time we've considered a budget bill for higher education, and almost every single time the answer has been no. Now, you may not realize, but we give budgets to higher education and we give the management of our public institutions to those organizations. They're the ones that dictate basically the terms. Now, if they don't have enough money, they're going to keep that budget and they're going to ask the students to pay more. We sometimes get blamed for it, and that's why I've always asked the question whether or not the budget bill that we have will increase student tuitions. I almost always have gotten a no out of that question. What I may want to draw your attention to is that box in the lower left-hand corner, the percentage change from 1997 to 07. That's a 10-year window of time. And the 112% figure, the underlined figure, that's how much our student tuition has gone up in 10 years, 112%. I would imagine if you're in a four-year college program, or maybe more realistically, a five-year college program, your costs would have gone up almost 50% in the course of the time you went into college in this 10-year period of time. The circled information, the 60%, 60%, and 57%, that represents the tuition our kids have to pay in excess of inflation. I put that in front of you so that you kind of have an idea of the crisis that we're beginning to understand by our students. Our students understand it. Our students keep coming here. They keep saying, please don't raise tuition. Please don't do it. But somehow our policies don't seem to hold accountable the Minsky or university system to keep those tuitions down. The amendment, the A14 amendment that's before you, simply flatlines our student tuition for the next 2 years. Let's give our students a break. Please, let's give them a break. They shouldn't have to experience a 50% increase in tuition in a four-year college program. And Madam Chair, Mr. President, I'm not going to ask for a roll call on this. I hope that maybe we can do something that helps our students in the state of Minnesota. I'll stand for a question.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Limmer, I think maybe we should turn that mirror on ourselves, not on Minskew and the university totally. I mean, certainly they can share some of the blame, but we also have a lot of blame to take, because we have not been increasing, even at the rate of inflation, in terms of funding our higher ed institutions. So when we don't fund them adequately, the only place they have to turn is tuition if they want to keep up quality. With Senator Limmer's proposal to limit tuition, which we have never done in this state before, it would mean a loss to the University of Minnesota of $68.3 million and a loss to Minskew of $72.6 million in this biennium alone. And so no students are asking for that, Senator Limmer. Students want us to control tuition costs, but they want us to do that by giving Minskew and the university more money so they can limit tuition increases. And we've known all along that that would cost $70-plus million to do that with Minskew. I know that, and I didn't have the money to do it. But if not, then how are we going to become one of the top three universities if we don't have the money to pay faculty? How are we going to serve our students in our two-year and four-year colleges, offer them the programs that they need, get them graduating on time, have enough sections for them, have reasonable class sizes, have counselors to help advise them? We can't do that if we don't have the money. So the students know that. They know that quality is at stake. And even though it's hard for them, they borrow money, they don't like the tuition increases, their family don't like the tuition increases, they know if they're getting a quality education, they're going to graduate, they're going to get a good job, they're going to be able to pay off those loans. So I would urge members to vote no. This is the easy thing to do. The hard thing to do is to come up with the money.
Senator Hand on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, I'm going to support Senator Limmer's amendment. I do it a little bit reluctantly because I'm not sure that it really addresses the problem that I think we have to deal with. And one thing I'd like to point out on the information sheet that he distributed to the body, if you look on the right-hand, the two right-hand columns, talks about the cost to the private four-year institutions in comparison to the Minskew, the 2 years in the University of Minnesota. And one thing that's kind of interesting, a couple of things. First is that the costs are quite a bit higher. The 2007 tuition looks like $24,700 versus $9,000 for the university. And the other thing that's interesting is the percent of increase for the privates is much, much smaller than the increase in cost to the publics. And the point I'm getting at here is that I don't believe that the actual cost of a year of schooling at the University of Minnesota is $9,000. I don't believe that. I don't believe that it is cheaper by two-thirds, roughly, what the cost of a four-year or of a year of education at, say, St. Thomas or Concordia or Gustavus. So, members, what we have here and what we have in the process that we've implemented is a system that makes it very difficult for us to actually know, and for students and their families to actually know what the costs are for education. So when you're going off to college after high school and you're choosing between the university or a private college or Minskew, you can't evaluate just on the basis of what the program offers, because you're getting skewed pricing information by the way we do this. So I think longer term we need reform in this system. What we need to do is make sure that the costs are reflected accurately. What does it actually cost in tuition at the university or a Minskew college? And let's put the funding out in some kind of a neutral grant and aid program that is independent of going to an institution. Let's put that money out there and let families and students access it and take it wherever they wish. Let's not fund the institutions, because I think that hides the true cost from the rest of us. We don't know really what the cost of tuition has been doing at the university. We know what the cost to the students has been doing because of our here in the legislature deciding to increase or not increase that aid. But it has nothing to really say anything to do with the actual tuition increase that's going on at the colleges and universities in the state of Minnesota. So I'll support the amendment because I think that it may bring some added pressure to the institutions to say, let's look at doing this differently. But I think long term as a body, we ought to look at this process and say, is this really the right process? So members, I think Senator Limmer is making a fair point. I think in the short term it may help our students at least maybe pay a little bit lower, but it may also bring pressure to say, let's get at the real costs that are going on in these four-year colleges and two-year colleges in Minnesota. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Vandermeer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to request a roll call.
There will be a roll call. Senator Robley.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is very tempting. And a part of it results from my frustration that even though we are giving an 11% funding increase to MinSCU and a 14% funding increase to the U of M, they still want at least a 4% tuition increase at MinSCU and maybe a 5.5% tuition increase at the U of M. Now, when you add all those increases together, it's a lot of new money. And I have trouble trying to understand how they can justify that much additional new money that is needed in their system when our CPI is under 2.5% a year. So I really do have trouble with where they're setting their tuition rates. And I, in a lot of ways, would like to tell them how to set their tuition rates, because I think that they have to be much more sensitive to the students. And they haven't been as careful as they should be. Now, we can tell MinSCU, we can't even tell the U of M, because they're operated by their own Board of Regents, some of which members we just confirmed, and I don't know if we press those members to get a commitment that they are going to keep tuition rates down low. But it is a constant source of frustration, and I did sign on to a bill that would have capped tuition at 3% a year. My concern with this is zero for 2 years, which might be a little harsh. But let me tell you, it would send a message if we pass this. I don't know if it would actually become law. But I think even offering it can send a message that we're frustrated with their big tuition increases, even in the light of the fact that we are giving them 11 and 14% over 2 years. And so I think we can pretty much tell them that they can keep those tuition increases down in the very low single digits for the next couple of years. And I hope that this body can make sure that message gets to the leadership.
Secretary will take the roll on the Limmer Amendment. Senate is under call. Senator Scheid is going to ask to be excused from today's session. We need a motion. All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 28 ayes and 37 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion? Any further amendments? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And after that last debate, this is sure to be a winner. I would like to introduce the A13 amendment, please, Mr. President.
Secretary will report Senator Rosen's A13 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate file 1989 as follows. Page 17 after line 4, insert. This is the A-13 amendment.
Senator Rosen on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. And as our debate occurred in this last amendment, this amendment, the A13 amendment, basically keeps the tuition increase to 3%. And members, I think that's a very, very reasonable approach to this whole issue that is plaguing our families, our students out there. And let's be honest, this higher ed bill really offers nothing to the average family, to the average student that wants to continue to go to school or go to school and know exactly what they're facing. So for the next biennium, if we could keep the tuition at 3%, I think that's extremely prudent. And I should remind members that back in 2005, we had a vote on an amendment. It was Senator Wieger's amendment to the higher ed bill. And we actually passed it, and it was for a 4% freeze on tuition. And I'm asking in this amendment for just a 3% increase. And back in 2005, with a 4% increase, we still had anywhere between 12.8 to 11.8% increase in our tuition in our institutions at MNSCU and the University of Minnesota. So please, members, I think you should consider this. We are sending a strong signal to our families, to our students, and I think we have a winner here. So I request a roll call. Thank you, Mr. President.
There will be a roll call. Any discussion on the Rosen Amendment? Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, as much as this may be tempting, and I could someone give me the amendment? I don't have a copy of the amendment. I think it's too much to say we're not doing anything for students in this bill. Given the limits on what we had to work with, we really are trying to be sensitive to students. We certainly have put more money into the financial aid program per student, because we did develop some surpluses. So I think many students will be getting financial aid that will help mitigate the increases in tuition. We put more money into child care assistance. We're trying to control the cost of textbooks. I think we really are trying very hard to be sensitive to the needs of students. And I've heard that the MNSCU board is planning on setting a policy that no campus will increase tuition more than 4%. So I do think that they are being responsive to the needs. I just would encourage members to vote no. I think that the system has got the point. They'll know about our debate. They'll know that we're concerned with tuition. They are concerned with tuition increases as well. And I don't think we should start dictating. We don't know if 3% is the right amount, or 2% or 4% or whatever it is. I think we should leave that to them to decide. And frankly, I have not had any students ask me for a firm freeze or even a dollar amount. They want us to fully fund the MNSCU and the University of Minnesota request and pay for keeping tuition down over and above that. And that would be about $78 million to do for MNSCU. That's what the students are requesting. They're not requesting a freeze.
Further discussion on the Senator Rosen's amendment. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pappas, you were doing real well until you said that the students were requesting a freeze. And my emails, and I'm sure there's other colleagues here that are getting information and pleas from families, from students, that please get your hands around these rising costs. And there is no substantial meat or anything to this, to your higher ed bill, that offers real substantial relief, and that's what I'm looking for your average family.
Senator Scoy, then we're going to vote. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. You know, these freeze, tuition freeze and caps are a real, real popular idea, and, you know, as I talk to students about this, they they advocate for that. But when I tell them that the result of this is that their program offerings at school are going to be reduced, then they don't think it's quite such a good idea, because the money's going to have to come from somewhere. And these schools, if we don't offset the revenue, will reduce the program offerings that they have. So I urge you to oppose this amendment.
Secretary will take the roll on the... Before that, Senator Sinjin.
Mr. President, members, I wasn't going to speak on this, but I think Senator Rosen's got an idea here that we ought to try. I think that there isn't a one of us that through the campaign and even on into the session haven't had college students come to us and talk about tuition. And in fact, I think they had freeze buttons, if I remember right. I think they were calling out for a freeze. You know, in the long run, or at least for today, rather, we don't know whether this is a good idea or not. But I think Senator Rosen has tried to find some middle ground here, try to put the legislature, if you will, in some control of tuition, which is a huge subject for the young people of the state of Minnesota. And I think we just ought to go ahead and try this. Senator Roebling pointed out very well that we're giving fairly substantial increases to the both systems, and on the other hand, their tuitions are going up. And I am tempted, and I'm more than tempted, to vote green on this, and I hope the other folks in the Senate chamber do as well.
Secretary will take the roll on the Rosen motion to amend.
This is a whole 3% increase in tuition.
The Senate is under call. We should be voting. Is that it? All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 31 ayes and 34 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion on Senate File 1989? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I've been encouraged by these last two discussions and the last two votes, and I'm wondering if I could offer an amendment, sort of A13 sub A, taking Senator Rosen's amendment and changing the language from 3% to 3.5% in the two paragraphs. And I'd like to offer that as an amendment, the same language, just changing the percentages from 3 to 3.5, and ask for a roll call vote.
You go 3 3/8 or 4. Sounds like we have an auction going on here. I guess.
Mr. Chairman, I know we don't typically do these kind of amendments on the fly, and since I'll withdraw my amendment, but I think...
Further discussion on Senate File 1989. The Secretary will give Senate File 1989 its third reading.
Senate File 1989, a bill for an act relating to higher education, appropriating money for higher education and related purposes, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. The Senate's under call. Before that, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to rise and just comment on the bill, even though I have no amendment to offer, and I know this is the appropriate time to do that. But this is a fairly good bill. I know Senator Pappas has expressed that she is not happy with the dollar amount, but again, I go back to the 11% increase for MNSCU on their base. This is ongoing money, TAILS involved, 14% for the University of Minnesota. It should definitely help hold down the cost of tuition for our students. We also have in here the textbook rental pilot program that we're hoping to get started, which is another big issue for student costs. When they're coming around paying $100 and $150 for a textbook that they can use for a semester sometimes, that's a big expense for our students. And we are trying to look at those costs. And we had a study, and we're trying to move forward with some ideas on how we can work with the faculty, with the textbook companies, and the bookstores, everybody, on trying to pull those costs down. And so there's some of that language in this bill. I'm pleased that the veteran scholarship money is at least earmarked in here. It isn't as much as I would like to see either, but we have a good placeholder and a good start on that to help our returning veterans in particular. I am very disappointed, however, that we do not have any portion of the governor's ACHIEVE proposal. And the reason I'm disappointed is because I think in the end, even though it costs us money in the beginning, it could save us a lot of money in higher education. The ACHIEVE proposal would have provided money as incentive for students to take college preparatory courses. And this is a big issue because we are seeing one-third of our students coming to college unprepared and indeed in a need of remedial courses. They spend their college tuition to take those remedial courses. They spend their state grants and loans to take those remedial courses. And they don't even get a credit toward their graduation for those remedial courses. So we should be doing that in high school. We should make sure those kids are taking those college prep courses in high school. And the incentive was to give them money that they could then take with them to college and use that there so that they could continue on their education. I think it's a great idea, and I'm extremely disappointed that we're not putting anything into it this year, because I think in the long run, having those kids prepared, not having one-third of them take remedial classes, can save us a lot of money and students a lot of time on their education track. We wonder why students are almost all taking 5 years to graduate. It's one of the reasons, folks, because they're not coming prepared. And we have to look at new methods of getting them prepared and incenting them for that opportunity. So I'm very disappointed that that is not included in this bill. But again, there are some very good things that are in here, and so I will be voting for it today. And I think that it's a step forward for our higher education programs in general. But I'm a little worried that the money is pretty much given to the institutions. We are trusting them to use it to the best of their abilities. We didn't earmark much at all. And in the governor's proposal, a lot more was earmarked for specific programs. But I think we will have to leave that up to the leadership at this point in the institutions and hope that they do a good job with this, because this proposal does not do that. But anyway, I'd like to thank the members on the committee. I think we had a good group. We had a lot of good times touring different institutions early on. Got a great look at some of our very fine state institutions and even a couple of our privates where some of our state grant money goes to students. And I'm proud to say that we have a good higher education system in Minnesota.
Secretary will take the roll. Senate is under call. Senate's under call. Must be voting. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill, number 42 on general orders for under consideration this afternoon will be Senate File 1925, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, Senate File 1925 is the Omnibus Agriculture and Veterans Finance Bill. The first article is appropriations, provides a summary of the direct appropriations in Article 1. The total direct general fund appropriation in this article are just over $98 million for the biennium. An additional $776,000 is directly appropriated from the remediation fund, with almost $68.9 million in statutory and open appropriations in this article. The total amount of money appropriated for these agencies is almost $167.7 million for the biennium. The Department of Agriculture directly appropriates almost $86.5 million from the general fund and $776 from the remediation fund to the Department of Agriculture. New general fund initiatives in this section include, members, $739,000 for additional invasive species control from the governor's budget, $182,000 for additional meat inspections from the governor's budget, $551,000 for electronic system for dairy and food inspections from the governor's budget, $243,000 for emergency planning activities from the governor's budget, $284,000 for livestock premises identification from the governor's budget, $260,000 additional for sustainable agriculture grants, $3 million for bioenergy loans, $100,000 additionally for organic certification cost share grants, $1,750,000 for on-farm research and outreach for farmers growing diverse stands of prairie plants for emergency from Senator File 480, Senator Kubley, $150,000 for assistance in business plans for biofuel producers from Senate File Number 480, Kubley, $300,000 for a biofuel feasibility study on the Boise Fort Reservation from Senate File 597, Senator Bach, $300,000 for a biofuel study on the White Earth Reservation from Senator Scoy, $232,000 for additional payments to county fairs and agriculture societies from Senator Scoy, $250,000 to the Minnesota Turf Council for research on native plant breeding from Senate File 1580, Senator Stumps, and $500,000 to the Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Council from Senate File 497, Senator Scoy. We also, in the Board of Animal Health, appropriate just over $6.9 million from the general fund to the Board of Animal Health. This section includes an initiative of $811,000 for bovine tuberculosis and surveillance from Senator Scoy and the governor's budget. Section 5 appropriates $4.6 million from the general fund to the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute for the biennium, including in this amount is $1.4 million for the technology transfer to bioenergy crop produce from Senate File Number 488 and Senator Kubley and from the governor's budget. We also, Section 6 is a compensation increase that provides that this article includes compensation increases for state employees of at least 3.25%. And that the amount must be used for that purpose. Members of the Senate, then I'm going to ask Senator Kubley if he will pick up on Section 23. He had a great interest in the bioenergy and the cellulosis, and then I'll come back after he's done.
Senator Coobley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Vickerman. I'll just give you a thumbnail sketch of the biofuels, bioenergy components of the bill. If you want to look at them yourself in the bill, since we don't have, you know, a table of contents for the bill, if you want to look at the lines 429 to 712, with the exception of most of page 5, would give you the finance pieces, and pages 19 to 24 would give you the components of Senate File 480. 480 consists of two major portions, a bioenergy portion and a biofuels portion. The bioenergy portion talks about energy that is actually produced by a plant from biomass, from a cellulosic material, that then displaces some of the energy that they currently have to buy. So using this method, say you know, a plant brings in some corn stover that they put through a process that helps them produce a synthetic gas that is then used as part of the energy requirements for the production of ethanol at that plant. You know, that's one of the pieces. The payments are made in a two-tiered rate. They pay one rate for cellulosic material that comes from row crops, and a higher payment is made for cellulosic materials that come from a blend of prairie grasses, or some prairie grass, or some grasses that have a higher energy content in them, and from which you will get a larger number of BTUs. Then moving on and looking briefly at the biofuels portion, that's also true once again. We do think we're a little ways out on the biofuels piece, and that's not funded immediately. But on the biofuels portion, once again, there's a two-tiered payment system, and you get one payment for cellulosic materials that come again from row crops or something that is currently in production, and a higher level for those, you know, the biomass that comes from some native prairie grasses. The prairie grasses, some of you have seen the presentations by Dr. David Tillman and Dr. Jason Hill that we've had in several different committees here at the Capitol. They're saying that we can get at least 2.5 times as much ethanol per acre out of this blend of prairie grasses, and hence the higher payment for the prairie grasses. You know, I think that we need to look at different sources of raw material, and biomass is one of those, I think, that has certainly shown some promise. You know, I think that's, you know, it's just one of the ongoing pieces that that needs to be looked at. We need to have some research on that, and that leads me to a good segue for the minor portions of the bill. One of the minor portions of the bill does look at doing some on-farm research and some dollars that go to the University of Minnesota, and a component there that will actually do some on-farm field testing to look at the commercial applicability of this style of production. The other minor piece is a piece that pays you for some rim ground. That's one of the state's conservation programs. But you could grow this blend of grasses on that rim ground and give an easement on that. And there are some payments in there for that as well. So those pieces, I think, give you kind of a thumbnail sketch at it. But we did give you know, the bill references for both the financial part and the you know, the policy portions. So if you want to look at those, feel free to do so. And if you didn't get those and want to look, I can give them to you once again if you just want to ask. So with that, I think I'll turn it back to Senator Vickerman and let him talk about a few smaller parts of this portion and then move on to the second article.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, then we'll go into Article 2, which is the Military and Veterans Affairs Appropriations. Section 1 provides a summary of the direct appropriations in Article 1. The total direct general fund appropriation in this article is slightly more than $64.7 million for the biennium, and an additional $1.35 million is appropriated from the special revenue fund. Section 2 of the bill is just standard language, but Section 3 is when we get into the military affairs, and they directly appropriate just under $40 million from the general fund for the biennium and $676,000 from the special revenue fund to the Department of Military Affairs. The new general fund initiative in this section includes $185,000 to pay for special assessments levied against National Guard training facilities, $60,000 for honor guards to serve at funerals for persons with service in the Minnesota National Guard, $1,500,000 for the Minnesota National Guard reintegration program, and $560,000 to provide additional administrative resources for the Department of Military Affairs to handle the increased responsibilities provided in this bill. All of these items in this section are taken from the governor's budget proposal, with the exception of the honor guard payment, and that was picked up by Senate File 487, President Solon's bill. Veterans Affairs appropriates almost $24.8 million from the general fund to the Department of Veterans Affairs for the biennium. This section includes a number of new initiatives, including $1.5 million for the Tribal Veterans Service Offices. This was from the governor's budget proposal. $1.5 million for the biennium for the Minnesota Assistant Council for Veterans, also from the governor's budget proposal. $500,000 for marketing veterans outreach program from the governor's proposal, and additional funding of $2 million for the state soldier assistance program from the governor's proposal, and $900,000 for the biennium for the higher education veterans assistance program, that also from the governor's budget proposal, and $1 million for the administration of veterans programs from the governor's budget proposal. We were able to put money in there for a ombudsman, trying to figure out and trying to get the Minneapolis Veterans Home back on track. So we funded that through our committee. Also, $200,000 for information technology for the department budget proposal, $150,000 each year for the Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery in Little Falls. This is also in the governor's proposal. $1 million for grants to counties for enhanced benefit programs and services provided to veterans. $500,000 for grants to congressional chartered veteran service organizations. And Section 6 in the bill, it's a World War II Memorial Donation Matching Account. Appropriates the money remaining in the World War II Memorial Donation Matching Account from various motor vehicle license plate contributions to provide services and programs for veterans and their families after fully funding the state share of the construction cost for the memorial. Section 7 is another issue. Honor Guards authorizes the Adjutant General to provide an honor guard at the funeral of any person who served in the National Guard and was either honorably discharged after 6 or more years of service or in active service at the time of death. Members, this is a great bill, I think, and really shows our respect for the veterans who have over in Iraq and coming back. We'd all like to have more, but there were two things that they were... two parts of the bill that they really were very concerned that we at least move these along, and one was the Soldiers Assistance Fund, and the other was the reintegration of these veterans when they come back, because there will be 3,000 or better will be coming back, supposedly be back, hopefully in August, and then we need to get them to fit it in where they need to fit. So, members, I want to thank my committee for working very hard on this. And also you, and I hope that all of you will take this home with you and just tell them that this state is going to be veterans friendly. We try to do that. I want to thank Senator Pappas just for a minute. I know it was difficult for her to find money for the GI Bill, and I was very happy we got what money we did get in the GI Bill, because you can use the federal part of that bill before this ever kicks in anyway. And sure, we'd like to add more, but I'm more than happy that at least we got that amount of money. One other thing we're looking at, and that's going to be Senator Box, kind of looking at some of the tax breaks, but that's in his committee and not mine. So I just can't say enough for all of the members in here, how you reached out,
reached out to veterans who have come back, who have been in Iraq and have come back here, and get with their families and get on with a normal life. So if there's no further discussion, Mr.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1925? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1925 its third reading.
Senate File 1925, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for agricultural, veterans, and military affairs purposes, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted. Calling him. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. It's 66 ayes and 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Without objection, we're going to resort back to the reports of committees.
Senator Bach from the Committee on Taxes, to which was re-referred Senate File 1986, a bill for an act relating to transportation appropriations, appropriating money for transportation, Metropolitan Council, public safety, etc., reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass. And Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate File 1992, a bill for an act relating to public safety, appropriating money for public safety and corrections initiatives, etc. Report the same back with a recommendation the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, I move that the committee report read by the Secretary be adopted.
On the motion by Senator Betzold, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate file numbers 1986 and 1992.
Second reading. Are we done? Senator Pogemiller, I believe that completes the work here. Any announcements of Senate interest? We've got just before that, without objection, Senator Scheid will be excused from today's session. Senator Moa.
Mr. President and members, the Senate Judiciary Committee will meet at 4:30 in room 120. I ask that all members please show up promptly, and then authors, if you have, for those who have bills in the committee, please come early. We need to try to get that done so that we, those of us who are on the Transportation Committee, can get to that committee meeting tonight. Thanks.
Senator Pretner.
Sorry. Room 112.
Okay. Room 112. Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee will meet in room 123 at 4:20. We have, I think, five bills to address, and if everybody is prompt, we can be out in an hour and a half.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Transportation Committee will meet in room 15 promptly at 6 o'clock. We've got a boatload of bills to hear, and we're going to hear them all.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, members of the Senate Agriculture and Veterans Budget Division will meet immediately in room 107.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans will meet at 5 o'clock in the caucus conference room to talk about tomorrow's bill.
Do you have food tonight?
Mr. President, the membership drive continues.
Last time you didn't invite us, so. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, good work today and good work in the committees. I know everybody's working very hard and appreciate that. And we are on we're on target to get these bills processed. Tomorrow we're going to take up the transportation bill on the floor tomorrow afternoon. And then we have a couple bills on Saturday on the floor. So I move that we adjourn till Friday, March 23rd at 12 p.m.
On the motion by Senator Pogemiller to adjourn till 12 o'clock Friday. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.